You're listening to episode 317 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Hello, Max.
Hey, David. How are we doing?
We're doing great. You and I had just a wonderful session on how to operate MacBooks, didn't
we? Yeah, this old, longtime Windows guy is still confused by the Mac operating system. So, and to make it doubly confusing, I've got one Windows machine running here and one Mac running here. And switching between the two real time is kind of confusing.
Everything's confusing these days, no matter what you do. That's why I'm consistently an all Apple household. And at this point, folks, we're going to end that conversation before we get all the hate mail from either side of the conversation. We got a lot to talk about. We've got growling autonomously, the FAA certification of UASs, drones are watching you in China and evidently on Netflix, no remote ID and RPM extension, the DoD drones throw nets. That's quite a catch for a story. An unmanned kit for the K-Max, hoping that the ice cream doesn't melt on the trip over. TFR busted at the Super Bowl, and a video of the week. So we got a lot of stories. We should get started. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a lot of stories. Let's get started, David.
Well, our first story, I think, surprised everybody except the Navy who did it. One version of this is from afcea.org, and that Boeing announced that three EA-18 Growlers were flown. Two of them were controlled by the third autonomously. This is pretty spectacular achievement, Max.
So explain for folks what an EA-18G Growler is for those that may not know.
The Growler, or the G version of the Super Hornet, which most people know them as FA-18s, either Echoes, E's, or F's. The G replaced the EA-6B Prowler, which is a anti-radar aircraft. It's designed to jam radars. The replacement to the Prowler is the Growler, which is based on the F-18 airframe. It's a two-place pilot and a weapon system operator or electronic warfare operator. Interestingly enough, one was actually flown in the Super Bowl flyover, but it's specifically designed. While it uses the F-18 airframe, it's got much more sophisticated electronics. It's hardened for electromagnetic pulse, et cetera, as well as being able to fire anti-radiation missiles. So these are really electronics-based aircraft. What the Navy did was, even though all of them were manned, two of them were flown as loyal wingmen off the third.
So this assists with something that we call a force multiplier, right, David?
Yes, exactly.
So the idea being that if you fly a mission with a combination of manned and unmanned aircraft, the unmanned aircraft can precede the manned aircraft, use their sensors to extend the reach of the manned aircraft?
There's multiple. You can spread the depth and width of the penetration. You can use them as upfront weapon systems where you're putting them in the hostile territory, whereas the manned aircraft would be behind them as a secondary role leading the strike. A lot of this test really is data management and communicating back and forth between the unmanned aircraft, I'm saying that with air quotes, and the manned aircraft, and communicating. And in this fact, something that, you know, we have used aircraft to fly drones for years as aerial targets. But usually you're only flying one aerial target with one aircraft. In this case, you've had two aircraft being flown by one. So there's a much more data intensive thing where you have two aircraft operating autonomously, but relaying back to a third aircraft. And that third aircraft has to manage all three.
So apparently the test was successful. and the military can proceed. I don't know what the next step of this is, but I'm sure we'll find out.
I think the next step actually would be a more using more autonomous aircraft other than a manned aircraft, you know. And again, it's dealing with data management and workload. You know, you're asking a fighter pilot to manage not just his aircraft he's in, but other aircraft. So there's going to be workload management involved with this kind of operation. So really interesting success by the Navy. We've been talking about loyal wingmen or et cetera. Australia has been dealing with this. So we'll see what the next steps are as we move forward. You know, maybe we'll start flying F-18s off of carrier decks, you know, and a strike package of four F-18s will only have one manned aircraft. But let's talk about the FAA.
Such enthusiasm.
Well, you know, we've talked about this topic in the past, and we knew it was going to come. I mean, it has to come. And that is, this was from commercialuavnews.com. How does the FAA aircraft certification process affect UAVs or UASs? So what are we talking about aircraft certification, and how does UASs being aircraft roll into that?
Yeah, the FAA is proposing in some cases to certify unmanned aircraft the same way they certify manned aircraft. But there's some criticism of that approach, including that aircraft certification is a long, hard, complicated, expensive process that an airframer like Boeing or an Airbus is able to do. But when you start rolling that out to some of the small guys, that it becomes kind of onerous. So some folks are pretty nervous about this. But what the FAA has done is they've published a proposed rule titled Type Certification of Unmanned Aircraft Systems. And the FAA is requesting comments on this policy, this proposed policy for type certification of certain unmanned aircraft systems.
Which is really coming at probably a bad time for the FAA and type certifications, because part of the debacle that we talk about every week on the Airplane Geeks is the 737 MAX and that certification process and how that was failed. So here the FAA is in the middle of an issue where the process didn't go well in manned aircraft, and they're trying to roll it out to unmanned aircraft. Part 107 sets forth rules for operation of small UASs without the need for an FAA airworthiness certificate. You know, the U.S. is weighing 55 pounds or more, and small UAS operating outside the limitations imposed by Part 107 must receive an airworthiness certification from the FAA for an exemption. This is a big deal, Max, because 55-pound UASs is pretty much for a industry, you know, that's becoming a pretty standard weight for even things like power line surveys, etc. So this will be challenging.
Yeah, years ago, 55 pounds sounded like a ton of weight compared to the quadcopters and multirotors we were typically dealing with. But that's, like you say, it's no longer the case. So the FAA has airworthiness and type certification process for airplanes, for rotorcraft, for balloons, for aircraft engines, and propellers. The balloons meaning manned free balloons. All of that is in place. Well, the FAA also has procedural requirements for issuing type certificates for what they call special classes of aircraft. And those are aircraft that would be eligible for a standard airworthiness certificate, but for which no certification standard exists due to their unique, novel, or unusual design features. Maybe drones fall into this category of a special class.
I guess we'll give the most ready example would be if you go to Oshkosh, the certification you'll see a lot will have the word experimental on the aircraft.
Right.
And that could be anything from a home-built aircraft all the way up to warbirds or jet aircraft that have been demilitarized. So they all have go through special certification, and experimental is probably the most common of that special certifications.
Yeah, maybe we need an equivalent here. But for these special classes of aircraft, the FAA would apply portions of the existing standards for the normal classes of aircraft, let's call them, and apply them to the special class as they find to be appropriate. So it's a little difficult to parse just exactly what this proposal, you know, would allow or not allow. But we've only got 30 days to figure this out, we being the, you know, the unmanned industry, 30 days because the comments have to be received on or before March 4th, 2020. Now, it's not an NPRM. It's a little bit different, but in some ways it's kind of similar. But it's a proposed policy, a proposed rule, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes, as always, as well as, you know, where you can comment on this if you've got some thoughts or if this might impact you.
As we record this, we release this, we'll be releasing this on the 7th of February in 2020. So not a lot of time, and definitely leave your feedback to the FAA. And like our normal comment or my normal comment to all notice of rulemaking is be thoughtful, be clear, leave the sarcastic stuff out of it, and provide really helpful comments so that the FAA can move forward with our input and not be adversarial about it, but be on the same team with the same goal. So let's go to the other side of the world with a topic we spent a lot of time on Monday night talking about on Airplane Geeks, but the evasive ways China is using drones to address the coronavirus. It's a big deal. It's getting worse every day, and now we're having whole cruise ships impacted and becoming floating isolation wards. But drones are a big deal in China, and they have been utilized a lot in this epidemic crisis in China.
That's right, David. As we've talked about previously, we know they've been used to observe pedestrians, bicyclists, others on the road, and when observing some improper or inappropriate behavior, unsafe behavior. We've seen stories of the drones coming down and through a loudspeaker system built into the drone, having the police department issue some instructions. So this article is about that same approach, that same technology being used for things like identifying individuals who aren't wearing a mask and coming down and the drone speaking to the offender, instructing them to get a mask and things like that. The tone of this article is kind of like a little bit about, well, like the title says, invasive ways China is using drones. I don't know that I would go that far.
It's got a tongue-in-cheek tone to it. Yes, it's presenting it in a mildly comical version. I mean, Slate.com, where this article comes from, it's doing it in a sort of tone that isn't really highly hostile to the behavior, but just as a matter of fact, because the way some of these things are approached, it's also interesting way the culture would approach.
Yeah.
The Chinese culture approaches it compared to, say, someplace here in the States. Like the first one is a police woman yelling through the drone's loudspeaker, quipping, "Hey, handsome guy, speaking on your mobile phone, where's your mask?" That would not fly here in the United States, either whether a woman saying that or a man saying it to a woman. I think I think that would be a no-go here in the States. What about the other examples, Max?
Yeah, another one is, and this comes from a video that was posted on Twitter by the Global Times, which is a Chinese government tabloid. But another example is a drone coming down, and out of the speaker comes a group of, quote, pretty young ladies telling them they should wait until they get home to eat so they won't have to take their masks off to eat out in public. There's even an example of some kind of a social media personality using a drone to give orders to some senior citizens about what they should be doing. But China is using, you know, this drone surveillance kind of thing for other things besides the traffic infractions, but they're also being used to monitor students who are taking exams.
I remember talking about that because the exams for are so competitive to get to the next level of school that they were using drones to prevent cheating, you know, people passing notes, etc. They were also using it to stop illegal border crossings. Now, here in the United States, that seems kind of normal that we use drones to stop illegal border crossings. But I'm wondering if they're also stopping people coming into the country via UASs.
They're even monitoring hospitals to make sure that they're properly disposing of waste. And of course, on the news, we've seen some footage showing drones spraying disinfectant to counter the coronavirus that's becoming so prevalent.
In our show notes, Max and I write up these things. And Max, you wrote down hospital disposal of waste. And unfortunately, the first couple times I read that, I had this vision of these drones flying out of the hospital and taking the medical waste to the dumpsters. So yeah, it was sort of, I get what you were saying, but it wouldn't be a bad use for drones.
True.
To help minimize the interaction between toxic waste. We send in droids and drones to do the work that we don't want to do. So it's not unfeasible. But Max, you had to go one step further, and you had to, evidently you've been watching Netflix.
Well, this is just coincidentally, and it follows from the story about the drone surveillance in China. Our listener, Linda, sent me a message and had discovered a new Netflix program. It's called Omniscient, and season one is out. And it's about a city that they've decided that they're going to use these little tiny insect-sized drones to observe everybody. And everybody gets a drone assigned to them, and it sort of sits in the background observing everything that's going on. And it will do things like if a crime is committed, you get reported, and if the drone catches you, you're guilty, period. And you have to suffer the consequences. So as a result, they're living in this little society where it's generally very, very safe. And as an example, the main character rides her bicycle to work, parks the bicycle in a bike rack, and then hangs up her jacket on the hook next to the bike rack. This is on the public street, and then goes into work without fear of it being stolen, because if someone takes her property, the little drone is going to see it and report it, and then you're hosed. So it's an interesting series. It's a Brazilian production. And it's dubbed in English, although the dubbing is pretty good. It's just that the lips don't move exactly in line with the words. But you get past that pretty quick. But the drones play a really significant role in the story. And again, it's about surveillance, and it's about trading safety for privacy. And it gets into a lot of different issues such as that. So thanks to Linda for sending that. I've watched the first two episodes so far of this season. It's kind of a murder mystery, so I'm curious to see what happens next.
Tune in next week when Max Flight reviews episodes 3 and 4 of season one of Omniscient. In the meantime, the rest of us will be suffering with the FAA being cantankerous. Evidently, a number of organizations have separately requested that the remote ID notice of proposed rulemaking be extended.
The comment period.
And the FAA has said, nah, we ain't going to do that.
That's right. Some of the organizations that were requesting the extension for comments included Airlines for America, AOPA, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, the Academy of Model Aeronautics, and the EAA, the Experimental Aircraft Association. And they pointed out that this rule or this proposal for remote ID is very complicated. It impacts, it would impact a lot of people. And because of the complication of it all, they really need more time to evaluate and intelligently comment on the proposal. But as you said, David, the FAA has denied that. So you still have until March 2nd to submit comments, less than a month away. We'll have the link again in the show notes. And I checked just before we started recording, David, and I see that the NPRM has received just a little over 10,000 comments so far.
And you read 8,000 of them already, correct?
Yeah, sure.
Though I will say, folks, if you do have some spare time, which most of us don't, sometimes it is interesting to go through and read some of those comments. Some of them are well thought out, and then some of them are just plain snarky. So it's like anytime you read comments, you know, on YouTube or et cetera. So it might be a rabbit hole if you've got several hours to kill. There's 10,000 of them dying to be read. So let's catch up with what the Pentagon's doing. They've got a dragnet out, sort of. This is from inputmag.com. Pentagon is spending millions to scoop drones out of the sky with nets. The FAA is fishing for comments, and evidently the Pentagon's fishing for drones.
Yeah, and the nets is just one piece of this. Fortem Technologies has announced that they were awarded a contract with the Department of Defense, and this is through the Defense Innovation Unit. And it's a contract to help counter and deter improvised threat networks like drones. So the DOD has purchased a number of solutions from Fortem, including SkyDome. These are all great names. SkyDome, Drone Hunter, that's the net shooting multi-rotor, Drone Hanger, and TrueView Radar. Collectively, they provide sort of a layered counter UAS solution.
So TrueView Radar is the smallest, most accurate, cost-efficient, distributable radar of its kind. SkyDome is an adaptable AI system that digitalizes space and fuses TrueView and other networked sensors to autonomously monitor any environment. Yeah, SkyDome sounds an awful lot like Skynet.
I know.
And SkyDome anticipates vulnerabilities and can alert personnel, cue defensive measures, or launch Drone Hunter to autonomously neutralize dangerous or malicious drones. Get the net out.
Yeah. So, the DOD has been concerned about this, as are other organizations. So they have this contract now with Fortem Technologies, and we ought to see some of the results of that in the not too distant future, as this company has already developed these, I think. In other words, I don't think this is a contract to develop the technology that lets the Department of Defense counter UAS, but rather it's purchasing it, I think, and then integrating it. Yeah, off the shelf.
They're weaving their counter UAS program, you know.
Yeah.
So you missed the weaving joke. We were going with nets, weaving. You know.
Oh, yeah. I missed
it. Sorry, right. I was stitching. I was trying to stitch things together.
Oh, God, David. Jeez. What's next?
K-Max.
That's a helicopter, right?
It is. It's a very versatile helicopter. Cayman Helicopters has been notorious for their rotor variation over other helicopter companies. Boeing Vertol, now Boeing Aerospace and Piasecki, had the counter-rotating front rotors and back rotors. Bell had the tail rotor with the main rotor. But K-Max had the egg beater, which was two rotors that intermeshed that counter-rotated. The Cayman Husky probably was one of the most famous Cayman helicopters there were that was used. And the downwash from the K-Max, the Husky was so good that they could use it for fire suppression at airfields and was used in Vietnam a lot. But the K-Max is a single person utility helicopter designed to carry cargo, but it eventually became optionally manned. Now, if you've listened to the show for years now, you remember us talking about K-Max being flown by the Marines in Afghanistan for resupply. Well, K-Max is continuing to improve their optionally manned solution.
They have a kit, apparently, which allows you to take an existing K-Max helicopter and turn it into an unmanned helicopter. And they're going to offer that kit for sale, or that kit can be installed on production helicopters as they're produced. And this is for commercial applications. They say the first scheduled flight is for third quarter of this year, 2020. But they already have some launch customers, Helicopter Express of Georgia and Swanson Group Aviation in Oregon have orders. They are the launch customers, and they are expecting delivery next year in 2021.
And K-Maxes have been used a lot by the logging industry to do logging and helicopter logging. So it's not surprising that these companies will get these optionally manned kits for them. The aircraft can lift up to 6,000 pounds. The first unmanned helicopter was flown by Cayman in 1953. So they've been flying these a long time. It's definitely one of my all-time favorite helicopters. It does look sort of like a praying mantis, but it's a complete utility helicopter. So congratulations to K-Max, and we'll see where they go. You know, we'll probably see a lot more of these now that they're entering the civilian world. And Terra Drone Europe and British Dutch transnational consumer goods giant deliver ice cream in New York. So the ice cream from Vermont flew unmanned in New York, huh, Max? It's a New England story.
Right. The ice cream, Ben and Jerry's ice cream. And so, of course, everybody's just eager to get their ice cream. So Terra Drone and Unilever are collaborating on this. They demonstrated this at a recent Unilever annual investor event where they flew a multi-copter drone. It had a delivery box attached to it that could carry three Ben and Jerry's mini cups of ice cream. And I guess they flew this inside Unilever's facility. I don't know, maybe this is sort of a gimmick. Although Unilever apparently is big in ice cream delivery. They have something called Ice Cream Now, a delivery service that they launched in 2017. And apparently it's become a huge business worldwide. I haven't seen any evidence of Unilever ice cream deliveries.
I was going to say, those trucks haven't come in my area.
No. So they're looking at drones to deliver ice cream. It's got to be short distance, right? I mean, a summer trip in the warm climates with ice cream.
It depends. If the box has got a cooling unit to it, it shouldn't be so bad, you know? And you want your ice cream. I mean, you really want your ice cream a little soft when it arrives, you know?
That's true. If it's too hard, yeah, it's just not.
My question is, do the cones come separately, you know? Yeah. All right. You had to find your grounded story, huh? But of course, it's the week after the Super Bowl, so I'm sure somebody did something stupid in Florida. And sure enough, guess what?
They did, and they caught them. This is from Drone DJ. Pilot faces a year in federal prison for flying a drone during Super Bowl week. So the FBI announced that they had arrested a 46-year-old man. He flew his drone through the TFR during Super Bowl week in Miami, the temporary flight restriction. And the authorities say he faces up to 1 year in federal prison if he's convicted. I'm really, really curious to see where this one goes, because I'm kind of getting the sense that the FAA, the FBI, the authorities in general, there have been an awful lot of fair warning kind of incidents, I think, where people have gotten just kind of a slap on the wrist.
You're saying this is going to be the example one, huh?
It might be. I think we may be getting close. I don't know if this unfortunate 46-year-old will end up spending a year in federal prison if he's convicted. But I wouldn't be surprised this time if there wasn't some jail time.
And Max, we've got our first video of the week. This is from my friend John, who I've known for over 30 years. He works with the NAST, and this is about the prototype of a new drone, storm response drone, and they flew it upstate New York in the new air flight zone.
Yeah, and apparently there was a Super Bowl commercial, but it was one of the regional commercials, so not everybody saw this. And it's a video from Florida Power and Light. About 30 seconds roughly into the video, you see this Taros unmanned aerial vehicle appear as a piece of this commercial, talking about, like you said, David, storm response. It's a fixed wing, V-tail, front engine.
It's a baby beach bonanza.
That's what it kind of looks like. So yeah, so it's kind of fun. We'll put a link to the video in the show notes. Actually, we'll put the video itself in the show notes as well, so you can look at that. And the part you want to watch for, like I said, is about 30 seconds into the video. So thanks to John for sending that along.
So I guess, Max, we probably should wrap this up. What do you think?
I think we've killed the list for this episode. So we want to thank all of you for listening to episode 317 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at the UAVDigest.com. And if you want to go straight to the show notes to see that video or to take a look at any of the news stories we talked about or find the link to the FAA proposal for aircraft certification as it applies to UAS, just visit the uavdigest.com/317.
And of course, you can find us on our Slack listener team, where we'd love for you to join in. You can do that by sending us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. And there, send your videos and your news stories. Make it easy on Max and I, so we don't have to hunt down these news stories. If you see something interesting, send it to us. You can find us on our Cafe Press store and on social media on Facebook and Twitter. If you can spell UAV Digest.
It shouldn't be too hard.
So with that, and that was just an inside joke for my co-hosts, or if you've listened to Airplane Geeks. So with that, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you all so much for listening.